Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Do you need me to get it started?
Sorry,
then,
Dan.
Or what?
I didn't realize we were on the air already.
I mean,
I was introducing everybody on Facebook because we're doing a Facebook Live because I have a special guest in the studio.
I'm waving at the Facebook right
there
now.
You go.
Hello, Facebook. Facebook. All of them. All of the books.
If you don't instantly recognize the voice, I will tell you it's BT, Brian Turner, longtime radio star in the Twin Cities.
You are too kind.
And I'm thrilled to have you in studio today.
Such a pleasure to be hanging with you. To the last time we did this was years ago on station, and my short partner Lee was on vacation. So let's get Jordan in.
When you were doing TV, back in the day,
and we had so much fun then. And of course, we've crossed paths on and off over the years, and always been pals. And so this is a real treat being here with you on the show today, filling in for Paul. By the way, thanks for letting me, Dan Cook, our great producer, and you. Thanks for letting me use Paul's office. That was awesome.
Of course, yes.
The deli
right.
tray and the champagne fountain were great.
I
found out it's not just for me. That's Paul. Every day.
Yeah, he has a whole in his rider. You know, we take out the green M&Ms and the champagne fountain.
And then the box of Gardettos in the corner. Shh, don't tell anybody.
I won't tell him you stole some.
Got a little bit of munchies going on.
So, BT, if anybody has maybe just moved to the Twin Cities like yesterday or has been living in a one-room box with no windows and no radio, give us a little history of where you worked in the Twin Cities and what you've been up to lately.
Well, I'll tell you, it all started at a 5,000-watt radio station. It started in the service. You know, we were here on the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and
here
I'm a proud veteran. I was 6 years in the Air Force, 6.5 years in the Air Force, and like Robin Williams in that Good Morning Vietnam movie, that's how I got my start in the broadcast career. I was a journalist and a broadcaster in the U.S. Air Force, stationed in really one of the, you know, I hate to talk about it, it was difficult, one of the toughest duty stations of all time, Crete, Greece. I don't know if you've heard of Crete.
It's a stunning and beautiful
vacation wonderland.
Yes, that's right.
Anyhow, that's where it all began for me. And then in commercial broadcasting, that was 1980. I got back here from the service in 1980 and started working at a smooth, what was then not even called smooth jazz, but the old K-Twin.
The K-Twin
108. Mm-hmm. And the great Jack Moore, my dear friend Jack, he's passed away several years ago, but he gave me my first job in commercial radio, and on we go from there. You know, a lot of different places that I've hung my hat. It's been a lot of fun. Continues to be a lot of fun. Now I'm here at WCCO.
It is fun. What do you love about radio? And you started in music.
Well, I did start in music radio, but also talk radio in the service, and then I've done a lot of television work, not nearly as much as you. It was a full-time thing for you. It never has been a full-time thing for me, but it was generally talk-oriented stuff there. But it's magical. I mean, it's ethereal. I mean, these waves go through the air, and then you hear the human voice, which is the basic foundation of the way we communicate. You know, sitting around a campfire or sitting around the cave fire, as it would be 50,000 or 100,000 years ago, it was all about telling stories to one another. That's where oral history came from. Of course, Native cultures still celebrate that in a huge way. Mm-hmm. And we hope to continue that celebration of human culture with what we do here on the radio.
So tell us about your family. You made fun of me a little bit for being a grandmother, because hopefully I'm one of the younger grandmothers that you know.
I know. It surprised me when you pinged me last night. It's like, hey, what's going on? I'm going to see my new grandbaby.
See my grandbaby.
You're like 32. What, this can't be.
And I got to suck her up. She's so delicious.
Oh,
she's 3 weeks old today.
Oh, Lila.
Baby Lila. Oh. And, she's just a little blob of nothingness and perfection all mixed into one. And you just sniff up the youth of her little tiny head.
Yeah.
And then when she moves and she purses her lips, and of course I got to change the diaper, put on the crack cream. It's just so delicious to be around her. And
in a different context, crack cream could come into a whole different frame of mind there.
For later in the show?
I heard, perhaps, right around 4:20, maybe. I heard some friends talking today about a new baby. I was overhearing them, and they were talking about new car smell and new human smell.
That's exactly what it is.
And it lasts for a while, and then it just kind of wears away, but when they're fresh and new. Like puppies and kittens, too.
That's right.
And especially like puppy paws.
Oh, yeah.
The Frito smell.
Delicious.
What's with the Frito smell? You know, you got the new puppy? You don't know about it? You know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't know the Frito smell.
Oh, gosh. You've had puppies before.
Oh, yeah. I have a brand new one.
There you go. Well, smell that paw. I mean, obviously, make sure it's clean. Yeah. But, you know, it smells like Fritos. I'm just telling you.
Really?
And it's the weirdest thing.
We went around the lake today, and she actually jumped in Cedar Lake, so I'm not smelling anything.
No, you're not
on
smelling
today.
Those paws.
Yeah,
you know, as they
gross.
Get older, it just smells like grass and poop.
Yeah, that's
but,
what
you
I
know,
mean.
Right
yeah.
out of the gate, mm-hmm. Fritos, I'm telling you.
It's really funny.
I'm sore this week.
Oh, why?
Well, we're moving. It's been like 2 weeks of moving. It's
sorry.
Been like 2 months of moving.
You know, did I tell you that I'm really busy,
thing.
So I can't help at all?
You don't want to come to my air quotes party.
I do not.
Hey, guys, beer and pizza.
Not enough free beer in the world, baby.
No, we've been able to tough it out ourselves. The next time we do this, I think we're going to hire the movers, you
okay.
know? But the best part about this transition is going from a big house, too many rooms. You know, kids are adults now. You asked about the family. Kids are 29 and 26. Mm-hmm. Too much stuff. And now townhome, no mowing, no, you know, snow stuff. My favorite story thus far in the move was a week ago Tuesday. Moving stuff in, you know, we got a long time to move in, but we got a lot of stuff, 24 years in the house. And usually, you know, you go out and mow the lawn, and then afterward, you know, you're having a nice cold beer. And then, but on that Tuesday, I'd moved a bunch of stuff, and it was like 3-4 in the afternoon. I'm going to have a nice cold beer.
For sure.
So I had a nice cold beer. And then the lawn guys came around, and they moved while I was having a beer. They mowed while I was having a beer.
Nice.
So that was turnabout. That was like 180 degrees of turnabout.
That's the way you do it, baby.
And that ramped me into the whole townhouse experience right there, that one moment. So that was great. Yeah. Nice place in Golden Valley. We moved from New Hope to Golden Valley. Actually, like just across Highway 100 from where Hartman grew up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right in the Golden Valley area. There.
So my kids all still live with me. I can't downsize yet.
No.
Because I'd like to.
You could probably get rid of some of
they
that
They got a lot
stuff,
of stuff.
Though.
Well, yeah, last weekend
you could
we
start
did
Marie
do that.
Kondoing that stuff.
And we did. We got rid of the basement stuff. We went, my husband's kids still, her grown kids had stuff in the basement.
Sure.
We told that story a little bit earlier in the week, how we did. We decided what sparked joy and
yeah,
what did
go.
Not.
Right.
And even if it sparked a little joy, not enough, it still went in
yeah.
the trash.
Because yeah.
I'm a
yeah.
purger.
I'll tell you what, my wife was really good at that. I was only so-so
hoarder.
With that. Yeah. No, not a hoarder.
Mild hoarder?
Suddenly, well, it depends on what the hoarding is. What's the hoard?
Baseball cards?
No tools. Okay. For me, I like my tools. I like to do stuff.
Okay.
You know, I talk into microphones and television cameras, and I write on computers for a living, so I do blue-collar stuff for fun.
I got you.
And so you got to have your tools, man.
So you do stuff. So my husband would say, like, oh, you have a real job. You do stuff. You don't just talk on the radio.
With the blah, blah, blah
Thanks,
and the
honey.
Radio thing. Yeah.
Thanks, honey.
Did you get a paycheck this week? They pay
That's
you
right.
for that?
We have health care because
yeah.
I talk on
yeah.
the radio.
There you go.
So I'm gonna shut that
there
down.
There you go, honey. Health care's good. How's the vision doing? We got a vision plan here, too. What do you think
you
about
like those
that,
teeth?
Big boy? Teeth? You got it covered here thanks to mama's blah, blah, blah.
Well, we're thrilled to have you
Good
in
to
studio.
Be here, buddy.
Dan Cook at the helm. And it is fun to see BT around the station because everybody knows BT.
Well, I've been working in the market here. You come around mm-hmm. and you see people, you know, because you've probably worked with them before
That's
in
right.
my case. So,
That's right.
yeah, it's a real treat to be here. John, our program director, he and I were talking about some show ideas, and mm-hmm. we're still working on them. And so we had several meetings over beer. And then it was like a week after our last meeting. It was last February or March. And Corey was going on a holiday for a day.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, hey, you know, in a week, you want to fill in for Corey? I said,
right.
yeah, you know, let me check my schedule. And sure. And so sure enough, you know, then March 11th, I was in for Corey on a Monday, March mm-hmm. 11th. And away we went. I mean, but the thing is, John asked me on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesday, suddenly I'm like getting the stuff from Intercom Community. Like, I guess I'm now an official employee.
Well, welcome to the fold.
I know. I got all the stuff. I filled out the stuff.
They teach you the secret handshake?
I got the secret handshake. Okay. I got fobbed on my first day so I can get in and out and do my nighttime drinking here instead of my garage.
Excellent.
It's awesome.
Well, here on the show, we do daytime drinking.
Well, you know, it can't have day drinking unless you start around noon.
Start a little early.
All righty.
So stay tuned. Brian Turner is with me all 3 hours, and we are going to have a great time. As you know, he just mentioned he's a veteran, so of course we'll be speaking about the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about that. And a fantastic music festival that's happening that's going to bring everybody together. This is Republicans and Democrats, cats and dogs, Christians and Jews, Kumbaya
in a big way with one of the best bands around, too. This is going to be a cool thing.
We'll learn about that next. You're listening to Boomerang by Doomtree.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff.
Jordana
Green, BT in studio, Dan Cook at the helm, and I love to be able to talk music with you.
Let's do it. Let's get Laserbeak on the line. Laserbeak, how are you, Beak?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me. How's your day?
Very good. Nice sunny summer day, and we'll hope for the same kind of weather when it comes Sunday, June 30th, this Common Sound Festival. This is such a unique thing, second annual one. How did you get looped in on this, Laserbeak?
Man, well, I got to say, the people at Beth El Synagogue tracked me down, and so I was dealing with Rabbi Avi Olitsky and Matt over there, and they kind of showed me their vision for what they're trying to do and grow this festival and kind of bring people from all backgrounds together and unite in our common belief in music and love, and that's kind of what Doomtree is all about. So once we nailed all that down, it was kind of a no-brainer for us.
Now, let's make this clear to our WCCO listeners. Doomtree is a music and hip-hop collective. You guys have been around. Well, your first record came out in 08. It was a self-titled effort.
Yeah.
But you guys, had been making music before that. But some notable names here. I mean, you as a producer and music head, POS, of course, Dessa has probably risen to the top of the heap, when it comes to just that sort of solo orientation.
Totally.
You guys are all friends. I mean, it really is about bringing love together and bringing music and community together with what you guys have done.
It is. You know, we used to joke that we look like a United Colors of Benetton hat. we would like go on tour. There's seven of us in the crew, and we all kind of grew up together in high school, but we would go on tour. We'd all sit down at a Denny's on the road, and the waitress would come up and ask if we were supposed to be sitting together or not, because we do kind of embody like all sorts of different people, and we have different interests and, hang with different people and all that. But at the end of the day, we come together as a family, albeit kind of a dysfunctional family like all of them are. But those are my brothers and sisters. You mentioned the solo thing. Like, we've for the last few years kind of been on a crew hiatus and just been focusing on everybody's solo projects. But we try to get together once or twice a year just to really, it's like our Christmas or something. And so this worked out perfect. And I was able to get everybody's calendars to align. And so we'll all be there on the same stage June 30th. Should be great.
Now let's step back for just a second here. You're all going to be there. POS is there. Mike Micklin's there. I mean, you're there.
Yeah.
Dessa's there. Everybody's there.
All seven members, which literally happen, once in a blue moon these days. So it is the sky's aligned for us, and it's exciting because, we don't even get to see each other or all be in the same room much in the year. So events like this really mean a lot. It's time to reconnect and build with family.
So the rabbi, I mean, he brought you into this fold. What was the first thing that struck you? Was it the bringing the two communities together? Because this is a co-production of Bethel Synagogue and Benilde St. Margaret, which people on the surface might go, really?
I got to be honest. I mean, at first when I saw the email and then had the first call, I had pretty low expectations of this thing actually happening. But I don't know. I think there's just a lot of good energy behind it and good faith. And it's nothing. We've never done anything like this before. We're used to playing in like sweaty rock clubs or bigger festivals.
Yeah.
Not so much in synagogue parking lots. But there's something kind of extremely unique and just the dedication of everyone that I've worked with at Benilde and at Bethel has been really. You feel it. And so we're happy to be a part of it.
And for those that don't know, Benilde and Bethel are right next to
each
other.
They are right next to each other.
On Highway 100. And they share a lot of commonalities. And as a member of Bethel Synagogue, they work together quite a bit. They do overflow parking on the high holidays. We get to park at Benilde. And when Benilde has a big event, they get to park there. And they do a lot of things together. It's nice to be part of a community that is so respectful, so understanding, and so open and kind to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it harkens to, I think, a vibe that is being reinforced with this event, and that is the vibe in St. Louis Park as well. Mm-hmm. That community, I know you live in that community.
I do live in that community.
But that community in general just sort of wraps its arms around
that's
people,
right.
And I know that's a part of this narrative too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of us grew up in Hopkins right next door to St. Louis Park, so there's that too, where it almost feels like you're coming home in a way. But yeah, I love everything that's going on in St. Louis Park, and it really feels like an extension of the city.
We're speaking with Laserbeak from Doomtree, talking about this music festival that Bethel and Vanilla St. Margaret are putting on, and obviously featuring Doomtree. It's open to the public. You get to go. I mean, anybody gets to go. That's the whole point. So tell us, give us the specs on it, Laserbeak. When, where, how much?
Yeah. So June 30th, Sunday, at the Bethel Synagogue. It'll be outdoors. They're going to have tons of vendors. We're going to have a bunch of family-friendly stuff. Cuckoo Kangaroo, which is like my favorite kids group,
nice.
Is going to be performing in the morning. And so it's going to go all day. You know, it really is about, you know, unity amongst our communities. And then, you know, we'll have Jeremy Messersmith, who will be doing some a little more stripped-down singer-songwriter stuff.
But cool.
Then, you know, it's a rap party with Doomtree. So by the end of the night, you know, save your energy. We're gonna sweat together and smile and yell. And so I believe it's like $25 ticket in advance, $30 at the door. CommonSoundFestival.com has all the info.
Yeah, really affordable
reasonable.
Ticket price for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that was the hope, you know, like it's really in this festival culture, it's really easy to all of a sudden look and, you know, sometimes you're spending $200 for a day and it's just, prices, when you talk about the community, prices most of the community out. So we wanted to really keep it affordable so that, you know, a family could go and feel like they're getting their money's worth and having fun all day long.
That sounds good. Sunday, June 30th, Common Sound Festival with Bethel Synagogue and Vanilla St. Margaret. Laserbeak from Doomtree. Beak, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Oh, man. Appreciate you guys. Have a great day.
You too.
It's a great event and just growing. It's also 3:30. When we get back, did you know that the D-Day plans were nearly leaked twice?
What?
To the Germans? It's true. Hear that story and Minnesota's participation in World War II. Just right here, we'll tell you something you might not know about how we helped win that war.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And make sure you tune to Henry Lake tonight after the Twins game here on WCCO. He does a show called Final Pitch.
He's great.
You know what? He does such a great job with that, and he loves to take your calls.
Let's hope that it's 41-21 on the record tonight. 40-20. 40-20 is where the Twins are right now. God,
it is an exciting time to be
Cleveland's
a Twins
at 31-30 right now. So, but yeah, two games down against the Indians. So we'll see what happens here tonight.
We'll see what
in Cleveburg, as we call it, between my friend Mark Tennant and I. He lives in Cleveland, so of course we have to make fun of each other.
And that's fair.
How's it going in Cleveburg, Mark?
Fair.
Of course it's fair.
A little taunting is a good thing.
Absolutely, teasing and taunting.
Today, obviously, is a very special day, the commemoration of the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And we learned that I'm Jordana Green, my special guest host today, BT.
Hello.
Also a veteran. Isaac Orr, a policy fellow at the Center of the American Experiment, released the following statement today. He said, "Today we remember the heroism of more than 160,000 American and Allied troops who stormed the beaches on Normandy on D-Day, and the thousands of soldiers who sacrificed their lives to save the world from the horrors of Nazi tyranny and the Holocaust." Isaac is joining us now to talk about all of the contributions, but specifically Minnesota's to the war. Isaac, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thank you for the statement, and thank you for the time. Now, Minnesota played an integral role, and sometimes, as you mentioned, often forgot. Tell us exactly what Minnesotans did to help win the war.
Basically, the United States could not have won the war without Minnesota and the contribution of Minnesota's iron miners. Most of the iron that was, you know, made into all of the, you know, the tanks, the airplanes, and the boats that really helped America have an advantage over Japan and Germany in the war in general, but especially on D-Day, came from Minnesota.
That's amazing. I mean, ships, aircraft, rifles.
You name it. Even things like rail ties. You got to build rail lines, even in wartime. Mm-hmm. You know, so you got to get the rail lines in there. I was reading a statistic knowing that Isaac was going to be on. And glad to have you here, Isaac. We appreciate it. At the Minnesota Historical Society site, because they've got different things about all things historical in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fascinated me. During one 9-month stretch, so we entered the war December 8th, 1941. In 1942, at a 9-month stretch, 70% of all the iron ore that went into wartime production came from Minnesota. And a train car, an ore car, left the Hibbing area, the Hibbing mines, a car every 20 seconds. Boom. Boom.
Really?
Just nonstop. Going to the port in Duluth and then being shipped away. Yeah. Duluth or Thunder Bay or wherever it may have been going to. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
Amazing. Isaac, and I don't know how much you know about the support staff for the miners, but how do you have any idea how women were involved, if they were? Did we see women going into the mines? Did we see them playing a role at all?
Oh, absolutely. The war effort was an all-hands-on-deck type of endeavor, and women who traditionally were not allowed to be miners became miners because so many people were either being drafted or there was such a huge demand for iron. I mean, we supplied not only the iron to our own ships and airplanes and tanks, but we also helped arm our friends, the French and the British as well. So Minnesota was not only important for domestic production, but we were an exporter as well.
Amazing. So it was really a global phenomenon.
Oh, absolutely.
And when everybody came back, when people did, those who returned home, how did that change then? I know you might not be an expert on Minnesota's iron ore, but how did that then change the economy of Minnesota and what was happening here in the iron mines?
Well, obviously, the demand for iron ore went down after the war was over because, I mean, that was just such an enormous demand. But the thing that is important to remember about post-war iron mining is that gave everyone in northern Minnesota an immense sense of pride, and it really helped craft the regional identity of the range. It's one of the reasons why mining isn't just a job up there. It's a source of identity, and that's one of the reasons why people are so enthusiastic about more mining opportunities, whether that's copper, nickel, cobalt, or iron up there.
Isaac Orr, we so appreciate the history lesson and you joining us today. Isaac is a policy fellow at the Center of the American Experiment. Thanks again for the time, Isaac.
All right. Thank you very much.
You got it. Always good to be reminded.
Absolutely.
It really is. Good to be reminded
well,
about contributions.
No pun intended, but you know how that wartime production, as Isaac said, it faded a bit.
Yeah.
But still, the amount of production just went right into the automobile production that, you know, as automobiles just really exploded in the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, so. And you have to change and grow,
yep.
As, you know, industries do. So, but always good to remember the contribution here from
Minnesota. D-Day was almost leaked, you tell me?
Okay, so this story is fantastic. 156,000 troops landed on Normandy's beaches. Military, civilian personnel, so many people were involved in planning the invasion. In today's day and age, BT, the kind of planning that went in, you know, it'd be all over Instagram.
Oh, of course.
People couldn't resist. And the leakage, and I mean that in its worst possible sense, that comes out of Washington and politics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I feel like it would be very hard, although we did get Saddam, it would be very hard to figure out a way to keep such an enormous invasion a good secret.
Well, think about all the commanders, wherever they may be on forward operating bases or what have you, where they just tell their troops, you've got to deposit your cell phone or your mobile phone right here before you go into this area. And if you're found with it, in many cases, it's a court-martial offense.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But even think about how we communicate now over, you know, satellite. I mean, how things could be intercepted. So, all right, anyway, there was a special classification for the D-Day plans. You're going to laugh, but the term was bigot. Isn't that horrible? B-I-G-O-T. It was bigot.
Bigot.
I mean, I guess maybe they were talking about Hitler. I hope they were. But really, here's what it was. It was actually to gib kind of backwards, and they changed a few of the words.
To Gibraltar.
To Gibraltar for the invasion of North Africa in November of 1942. So there we go. It was called Bigot. The secrets were so closely guarded that once the King of England was touring a ship where there were some troops, and he wanted to know what was happening behind a roped section.
In the old bigot section.
In the old bigot.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Where the bigots were. That's
let the bigots work.
Where the bigots were. And he was gently ushered away. And in the words of the officer responsible for ushering him away, he said, well, nobody told me he was a bigot.
I dare say I'm the king.
Imagine?
I should be able to see what's
Isn't
behind that
Isn't that hilarious?
Curtain.
It's hilarious. But here's how it got leaked. Okay. 3 months before the invasion, a U.S. Army sergeant somehow managed to mix up some papers with a letter that he was going to send to his sister.
So he sent it off. Hey, sis, I'm doing fine, but now, hey, what's this bigot thing? It slopped into the envelope.
The date and location of the invasion were slipped, along with other papers, were slipped into this letter that he was sending his sister back in Chicago. Okay, by a complete fluke or not, because coincidences, you know, they happen for a reason, the package burst open in a sorting office, and a quick-thinking U.S. mail employee alerted the FBI. But suspicions grew because the sergeant and his sister were of German descent.
Oh, sure.
Living in the Chicago area.
Sure.
So, you know, everyone's kind of freaking out. Like, what's going on? The investigation exonerated the sergeant of espionage, although he was strongly reprimanded and held in isolation until after June 6th.
Then everything, you can go out and have your beer.
That's right, because it's done. Okay, so get this one. A couple months later, a senior staff officer got a bit carried away at a party in London and told fellow guests that the invasion would definitely happen before mid-June. He just got drunk at a party, and he said, on my honor, the invasion will take place before June 15th.
He's a major general. He thinks he's being cool. I'm going to let you know some cool stuff because I'm a high-ranking general officer in the Army.
Can't hold his liquor.
I guess he wasn't a high-ranking general officer for too long.
Wow. Well, like, word got back to President Eisenhower. A month later, he was demoted. I can't believe he wasn't, like, court-martialed. He was demoted to the rank of lieutenant colonel and sent back to the U.S. in disgrace.
Oh, yeah.
He retired in November.
Like colonel, brigadier general, major general. Wow. Going out of general ranks and then three ranks down.
There you go. So there was some stuff going on. So it's amazing that it didn't get leaked. Thank God.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know the outcome, but it wouldn't have been surprising. And in today's day and age, God bless us if we can pull something like that
off. We couldn't. We would never be able to do this now.
WikiLeaks and a lot of people working against us, even for the common good.
Unless we had them encrypted phones going or something.
Time right now is 3:47. I got to tell you, that's a Wixen Jewelers time check. As Minnesota's only full-service jewelry store, Wixen offers a variety of watch repair and jewelry services, all completed in-house. If you're not familiar, it's the theme to Star Trek. I get a little flutter because I'm a Trekkie. I grew up watching Star Trek. It was my dad's favorite show of all time.
Are you a Trekkie or a Trekker? What do you call it?
I call him Trekkie.
Trekkie? Yeah, it's kind of old school. That's cool, though.
I mean, I know the Vulcan mind meld.
You do?
You know, yes, live long and prosper, the Vulcan hand symbol that I can actually do. I should tweet it out.
The Vulcan grip, the whole thing.
I mean, the whole thing. So you're a Trekkie.
I loved Star Trek. I still love Star Trek.
Right. Dan thinks we're nerds, and I don't care. Because he loves Star Wars, so I can get back at him.
Star Wars too.
You know, we can love Star Wars too. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, you can love both. You just can't confuse them. That's the problem.
It doesn't have to be.
Well said, Dan Cook. Yeah. Well said.
Fine.
Somebody in this room confused them earlier today.
I
won't mention who it is.
But
she was corrected.
Sorry, Dan. I'm sorry I did that.
Stop it.
See what I did for you
there?
Stop it. See where my love carried me?
He's just a little too sensitive. But Captain Kirk looking really hot back in the day.
I almost started singing when I heard the theme, though. I almost started riffing on Lucy in the Sky. Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine dreams. And marshmallow skies.
The reason we're talking about Star Trek is because, well, back to the whole D-Day thing. Now, before becoming Scotty of Beam Me Up Scotty, Starship Enterprise James Doohan. Is it Doohan?
Yeah, Doohan. Like Doohan.
See, you know him better. You're a bigger fan than I.
You know, it's an Irish name, so Doohan.
It's Irish.
Oh, okay, there you go.
He's not Scotty. He should have been Irishy.
Was known to his World War II regiment as the craziest pilot in the Canadian Air Force. The craziest pilot in the Canadian Air Force.
I love it.
I mean, isn't that great? Because he must have been a whole lot of fun.
I knew he was a lieutenant. I mean, he joined when he was a kid, rose up through the ranks. But I didn't know that his sort of moniker was,
craziest.
Jimmy Doohan?
The craziest.
Craziest in the Canadian Air Force, eh?
By 1940, he'd worked his way up to the rank of lieutenant, sent over to England with the 14th Field Artillery Regiment of the 3rd Canadian Infantry Division.
Okay.
4 years later, he took part in the greatest maritime invasion in history, D-Day, the invasion.
Good on you, Scotty.
I know, right?
Wow.
At Normandy Beach. So, obviously, did well there. Air support had been sent out prior to the landing to try and chip away at the formidable German defenses. The soldiers sailed toward Normandy beaches on June 6th, facing a seemingly insurmountable task. He and his men got close enough to the shore so they could disembark without drowning under the full weight of their equipment, all the while under constant barrage of enemy fire and broad daylight. And once he was on the actual beaches, they had to make their way across littered sand with anti-tank mines that the Germans had buried. Obviously, they were on their way to higher ground. But what a hero. I mean, anybody who got off that beach is an ultimate hero and forever changed. He managed to take out two German snipers.
He got shot there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was not unscathed. You have that in front of you, sir?
He had 6 bullets hit him, 4 times in the left knee, 1 mm-hmm. in the chest, and 1 in the right hand.
That's right, as he was walking back to his post. That's right.
Oh, look at this. I didn't know this. Yeah, check this out. Mm-hmm. Look closely, Star Trek fans. I didn't know this. I got a little factoid here. The bullet to his hand took off his middle finger, an injury he would always attempt to hide during his acting career.
See?
So when you're watching Scotty trying to recharge the dilithium crystal chamber and going beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, and the ship's doing that, it'd be kind of cute if Scotty was, all right, son, I'll get to that. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, beep, boop, beep. You know, but no, the ship makes those sounds, sort of.
Yeah.
And but he, watch his hands. I never knew that. He's hiding it.
I guess he's hiding it, or maybe they gave him a prosthetic or something like that.
Yeah, who
but
knows?
I guess it did not stop his beaming up skills.
Scotty's hand. Why is Scotty's hand always behind his back?
He's beaming everyone everywhere.
Cool,
we got a special
stuff.
Guest caller on the lines. Oh, Scott. Maybe Scotty. Scott's in his car. Scott, jump in here, love.
Hey, I heard you talking about James Doohan, and my girlfriend brought that up last night, and I said, how many times have I told you? You obviously don't listen. My grandfather and James Doohan, they were like on the same crew. It was a 17-pound cannon crew.
Wow.
Oh,
they were
cool.
On during, and they landed a couple days after D-Day, but my grandfather used to tell me stories about, how brutal it was and all that. Mm. I guess Doohan got shot like multiple times.
Yeah, 6 yes. times, dude.
And he just, and he survived, but that was my only, I thought that was pretty cool, because my grandfather's in there and he had all the memorabilia and everything. And, but that was,
that's cool.
It was the Canadian infantry. They were, the artillery. It was
that's
a 17-pound cannon.
Very cool stuff, Scott. And thank you for your grandfather's service. And be nice to your girlfriend. She does listen.
By the way, after his injuries, that's when he learned to fly. And then he became James Doohan.
The
craziest pilot.
He was flying between telephone poles. He was doing some crazy stuff. Absolutely.
We expect nothing less.
Gail Rosenblum will join us next to leave us feeling inspired on this day with her great stories from the Star Tribune. Stay tuned after the news.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.